Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your sober call and deadly number, 1-800-422-416. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from and to all our traditional owners across the daily country of ours. Welcome back to National Talk Black. Have you say your mob yarn up strong. I'm going to have a deadly yarn now with deadly sister Fern Newcomb from Murra Law. And our topic today is destruction in the Pilbara, which is a very important conversation and disheartening, angry, all the above. But got her on the line now. Fern, a very good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Have a good morning to you too.
Thank you for coming to the program. Look, very important discussion. We're talking today about the Rio Tinto explosions that destroyed rock shelters in the Pilbara. What actually happened and how did it even happen?
Okay, so on the weekend of the 23rd and 24th of May, Rio Tinto detonated explosives in the Juukan Gorge. On Tuesday, the 26th of May, a spokesperson confirmed two of its ancient rock shelters were destroyed, as we most of us would all know. So Rio Tinto had been working together with the traditional owners of this country in the Western Pilbara for the past 17 years. So the Juukan Gorge was home to Juukan 1 and Juukan 2 rock shelters, they're called, from which archaeologists have had artefacts dated back to over 46,000 years. So, to put that in a bit of perspective, the Great Pyramid of Giza has been dated to 4,500 years.
Hello, yes.
Yeah, so an extra 41,000 years. So, the short answer for how it happened, Trev, is that they actually had the permission of the Western Australian government under Section 18 of the Western Australian Aboriginal Heritage Act. In fact, back in 2013, Rio Tinto were granted this ministerial consent to conduct activity at the Brockman 4 mine. And conduct activity includes blasting and explosives and use of all that stuff.
So did the mob up there agree with this or was it done without their consent?
So, very complicated question. Because John Ashburn, who is the chair of, and my apologies and no disrespect intended if my pronunciation is way off, but it's the Putu Kunti Kuramara, often called just PKK, okay. Land Committee, who are the mob up there, the traditional owners from up there, said that the traditional owners were frustrated by a rigid and inflexible regulatory system that didn't allow consideration of new and important information. Information like the 2014 discovery of staggering, as they were called by the archaeologist, artefacts, including a tool made from kangaroo leg bone, which was 28,000 years old, and grindstone technology believed to be an example of its earliest use in WA. So Section 18 of the WA, the Western Australian Aboriginal Heritage Act, has not been reviewed since its enactment in the 70s, so more than 50 years ago. And it doesn't have any mechanisms for review or appeal that allow cultural heritage compliance. So the end result of this ends up is that although the traditional owners did not agree with the blasting, they really had no avenues or legislated avenues for the decision to be overturned. And obviously Rio Tinto did not let the traditional owners know prior to the detonation.
So when did they let the mob know? How did they find out about the blasting?
So Birchall Hayes, who is a PKK traditional owner said the group only accidentally found out about the explosions.
Wow.
This is, I was so upset when I read this, and subsequent destruction of the rock shelters, because, and Rio Tinto only told them about that the site was impacted after the group, PKK, requested a visit for the upcoming NAIDOC Week celebration. So they contacted them to, you know, give them enough notice so they could go to the site, go on to site for NAIDOC Week, and then they told them, oh, the site is destroyed. So Mr. Hayes did mention that he thought PKK and Rio Tinto have a good relationship, that he thinks that they do. He also said there was room for improvement, though, particularly in their communications with the traditional owners.
Does it look after this incident, tragedy, really, that the Rio Tinto will improve in this area?
Well, don't get me wrong, Trev. You know, Rio Tinto complied with all their legal obligations when they blasted this site. It's the entire Western Australian Aboriginal Heritage Act, and it's under review, and new draft legislation is expected to be released for public comment this year. It was already under review, but this has put an extra sort of rocket up the tail end of the reviewers, for sure.
Yeah,
the changes, are expected to reflect the completely different arena that this legislation operates in. So it'll have processes to consider new information and options for appeal, which means that as far as communication with the traditional owners go, the authority that Rio Tinto and other mining giants operate under will have to be completely changed in WA under the expected new laws. So better communication will be mandatory.
Oh, so where can listeners go to get more information about this?
Yep, so they can read news stories about the court actions, they can read news stories about the explosions and the legislation, so just by Googling Pilbara explosion Rio Tinto. One more note before we go, just before I do the little sign-off we've got. So even without the legal avenues, this happening and the public backlash the community activism has sent sort of aftershocks already been felt. BHP announced on the 12th of June, so 5 or 6 days ago, that it will put plans to destroy dozens of sacred sites in WA on hold following the community backlash from the Rio Tinto explosions. So even though there's not new laws yet, BHP have decided to put... I mean, why they were doing it in the first place is ridiculous,
exactly.
But they have put them on hold.
Well, to me, the communication is not there. When they Rio Tinto are doing their mining, they're not communicating very closely with the TOs, is what I'm picking
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Especially if, like the TOs have said in that area, they have a good relationship. Like, how did this even happen? Obviously, they're only... by this, it appears that it looks like they're only doing their legislated minimum of communication.
So, to me, Rio Tinto should be paying for archaeologists to go in there and to retrieve what they can retrieve in regarding protection of the sacred site.
For the rest of it, Rio Tinto has said that they are, and they've gone, obviously, back to communications to work out how they can protect the rest of the... because there is more rock shelters there. There's not just the two. There's quite a few. And so they are working with PKK again to, you know, go over their, obviously, their Ilyuas and find out what they can do to protect the rest of the artefacts and the sites that are there, because it's just crazy that...
Of course it is.
We could lose any more of that history that's
exactly.
irreplaceable.
Look, it gets us as First Nation people so angry and frustrated. I mean, what we're dealing with in life in regard to the so-called closing the gap, unemployment in this country for our mob, you know, housing, health, all the above. And then this happened is really a kick in the guts. It's really, frustrating. It makes us angry, you know. But
it would be so frustrating. And when it happened, so it happened literally the weekend before Reconciliation Week.
Yeah, hello. Here's your gift. Thank you.
Yeah,
fantastic. Thank you for sharing very, very powerful information. We're watching the story very closely. Fern Newcomb, thank you, my sister, and let us know who Mara Law is.
Okay, so Murrawa Law is the nation's leading independent Indigenous legal firm that specialises in commercial and Indigenous land law. You can call us on 4041 3088, or you can check us out and get all our contact details online at murrawalaw.com.au.
Too deadly. Fern, thank you so very much. Beautiful information. Good catching up with you, yarning with you. A big shout out to your deadly team. You take care, stay safe, and we'll yarn soon, Fern.
Will do. You too, Trev.
Awesome. Bye-bye. A deadly yarn there with Fern Newcombe, her name is. She's one of the deadly lawyers there at Murrawa Law, and the topic there, destruction in the Pilbara. So we were talking about the Rio Tinto explosion that destroyed rock shelters in the Pilbara and what actually happened and how did it even happen. So it looked very sad, very frustrating, and that I think should be shining a light onto all mining in this country and the communication with TOs on country. So very, very angry and frustrating situation there. Have you say, yarn up strong, your mind. Add to the conversation 1-800-422-416. Yarnum with Borley on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program. You know it, National Talk Black. And we're live at the First National Radio Station here in Cairns. BBM Bumba Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give the Murray a call. Let's have a yarn. 1-800-422-416.
My name's Raven and you're listening to Talk Black on BBM 98.7 FM.
Yes, a very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Station Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumba Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your sober calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, I'm going to catch up a yarn now with Professor Christy Muir, is the CEO of the Centre for Social Impact, CSI, and a Professor of Social Policy in the Business School at University New South Wales, Sydney. Talking about, she's commenting about the disadvantaged, poverty, social cohesion, homelessness and housing, government policy, wage subsidy, a whole heap of things, and we've got her on the line now. A very good morning, Professor Christy, how are you?
Good morning, Trevor, thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. You're based in Sydney, is that right?
I am based in Sydney. I'm sitting in Dharawal country. It is a beautiful place to be, and let me acknowledge that is Aboriginal country, was, is, and always will be.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. I'm probably sitting there with a beanie on, yes?
Yes, it's freezing.
Fantastic. I'm in sunny North Queensland. Thank you for coming to the program now. Is poverty high in this country?
It is high in this country. So the most recent stats show that over 3 million people in Australia are in poverty. And what that means in terms of thinking about the numbers, it's about 1 in 8 of us across the country, and alarmingly, that's 1 in 6 kids.
So as a first world country, can we do better? Yes.
We can definitely do better. If you look at us compared to other countries around the world, and even if we just take the wealthiest countries in the OECD, Australia ranks 16th out of 34. That's pretty poor, I think. And there are plenty of countries, obviously, you know, the 15 above us doing much better, including our friends across the ditch in New Zealand.
Okay, so when you look at the world we're living in at the moment, thanks to COVID-19, it's turned the world upside down. Do you feel that the government, as well as us as individuals, we can do more?
We can definitely do more. I think, let me just start outside of our country for a second. Oxfam has predicted that worldwide poverty, COVID-19, could push the poverty rate back up to 500 million people across the globe, which is really alarming. So I think we have to be worried outside in terms of people, our neighbours. But also in Australia, we know that COVID is particularly problematic. And people know that it has turned everything upside down. People have lost jobs. They've lost relatives, they're having to stay at home, their lifestyles are different, the economy has been turned upside down, and of course that's not even starting with all the social, the health and other social issues that we face as a result of COVID. And I think in terms of your question, Trevor, about the government, I think one of the positive things that we saw as a result of COVID is that we've kind of seen what happens when we're in crisis and there's political will to do something about it. So some positives that we've seen in COVID is the government doubling the unemployment rate.
Sure, okay, yep,
because of the recognition that actually that $40 a day was completely inadequate. And we know around those poverty rates that I talked about before, those poverty rates are largely significantly affected by social security payments, and the social security payments just haven't been high enough historically.
All right, so when you look at it, the government need to do more, but we as individuals need to do more. Are we talking about also the unemployment, but we're also talking about health, the mental side of things for individuals, the new industries as such, that all those come into the equation?
Yeah, there's a bunch of things that we need to look at and do. So we want to make sure that we keep those social security payments higher. That's actually really important. We know that internationally that's one of the best things you can do to address poverty. But then, as you mentioned, there are other things that are really important. So having access to social and affordable housing is really critical. Mm. The employment and underemployment are big pieces to the puzzle. So how do we make sure that we have jobs that people can go to? And really one of the things that I think we need to be worried about is making sure that people who have been unemployed in the past don't become really long-term unemployed, and that what we've seen in COVID is people that have never lost a job in their life have lost their jobs. Mm. And so what we don't want to see in recovery is just that group getting into employment. We want to make sure that people that were already unemployed also have the opportunities and the supports that they need to get into employment into the future. Mental health is a big one. But there are other things. So if we look at some work that we did last year on Indigenous financial resilience, for example, there are some key things that are going on for our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Australians that are affecting their financial well-being. So we know on a real positive front, the concept that wealth is something that is shared, I think, is really fantastic and a wonderful thing about Indigenous culture. And I think there's probably a lot we can learn as a society around that. Mm. And if you take that kind of idea where, you know, having enough is making sure you can feed your kids and you can, you know, keep them sheltered and housed and in school and doing the things you want to do, but also supporting your broader family and your broader community. And if we took that concept and we applied that from a policy perspective across the country,
yes,
you'd start to look at something like universal basic income, and you could start to think about, well, what would it mean if wealth was something that we shared as a society, and what kind of society would we get as a result of that?
Well, if you look at the situation we're sitting in at the moment in regard to, you say one out of eight is in poverty. So what has been happening hasn't been working. So change, to me, is an engine of growth, yes?
Absolutely. It definitely hasn't been working, and those poverty rates are higher in our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. But what we had before hasn't been working because those social security rates are really, really low and keeping people in poverty. We don't have enough social and affordable housing. So it becomes really problematic when you don't have enough housing stock for people to go to. What is available, rents are too high.
Which is essential living, isn't it?
Or to pay. That's exactly right. And when we think about what kind of society you want to live in, there's sort of fundamental agreement that actually we should have the right of safe, stable, affordable housing. You know,
yes,
we want to have access to education. We want to have opportunity for good health or the health supports that we need if and when we need them. We want to make sure that all those fundamental basics are ticked off so we can have a good mental health and we have enough food to eat. We can keep the electricity going. All those things that are really important for our lives. And I think the other one that has really shown up in COVID is the importance of digital inclusion. So do you have access to a computer or a mobile phone where you can also get access to the internet and you've got enough money to pay for data? Because we saw a whole bunch of kids during COVID-19 obviously having to learn at home.
Sure.
And if you don't have access to a computer and the internet and decent data, what hope have you got to keep up with?
Well, we're talking about the 21st century information highway, super information highway, and that's what we're talking about. And knowledge is power or potential power, but you need to get the knowledge at the table or at your fingertips, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know that whole, like, knowledge is power thing, and it's the 21st century, but would you believe that there's 2.5 million people across Australia who are not digitally included?
Wow.
I mean, I think that's really a big worry. And how do you access information? I mean, even if you think about, say someone's suffering from or experiencing domestic and family violence, how do you even get in touch with help or know where to go
exactly.
for help if you can't look it up online? And sometimes those of us that have access, you just take it for granted.
And what about schools? And I mean, the so-called curriculum, like the definition of insanity, doing something over and over and again, expecting a different result. The curriculum hasn't changed since day dot, you know what I mean? So there should be some changes in the curriculum and probably in the sense of life skills or you know, how to balance a bank account, positivity, motivation about life and aspiration, and you, the individual, you are a beautiful person and you've got the power, sort of thing, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that piece in the education that I love is where you landed on that, Trevor, around, you know, you being a beautiful person. And we need to, there's actually, if you look at the productivity definition for what they want to achieve through education, it isn't just about that academic learning. It is also about creating great people.
Exactly.
It's about people who are engaged in their communities, who are helping out other people, whether that's through, you know, formal or informal volunteering, being engaged in whatever way that you're able to is actually really important. And that's, when we think about what kind of society we want, people are pretty in agreement that that stuff is important. It's not just about the academic knowledge.
Mm.
I think one of the challenges we have in that education space is we've got all these great kids and young people that do incredible things who might not be recognised for those incredible things, like, you know, the volunteering they do on the weekends,
yes.
young carers who are caring for their grandparents or their parents who might be...
Get an award for that at school for the work that you're doing.
Yeah, you know,
get recognized.
Credit for all those
exactly.
things is really important. And even for kids that are working, you know, like part-time. So
yes.
Imagine if we had an assessment criteria that didn't just measure you in a test for how good you are academically,
exactly.
but also gave you a tick that said, yep,
social skills,
you know,
biggest
yeah, social
heart,
skills.
Yes.
Johnny's got a great heart. He's been helping his grandma every Sunday or,
exactly,
you know.
Exactly, yeah.
Claire's at home supporting mum every day because mum's got a disability and, you know.
That then creates the passion, passion to be a social worker or to be a heart surgeon or to be a nurse or a doctor because you're helping someone and you're getting rewarded for it or recognised for it. That empowers the individual, yes?
Absolutely. And the other thing it does is it opens opportunities of more equity down the track. So
yes.
if you do want to be that doctor or that social worker or teacher or whatever you aspire to be, you can then be recognised for the other things you do that contribute to the world, and you don't have to feel like that if you're doing other things to contribute and you don't get the academic marks that somebody else might get that is just concentrating on their schoolwork, you're not disadvantaged. And I think that's really important. If we could embed that from little kids through to high schools and higher education,
yes.
it would be a different society.
So your message then to our listeners regarding what can we do to get out of poverty for each individual, what can you do?
I think there's a whole lot of things that the government has to take some responsibility for. So
okay.
we know social security payments are really important. But saying that, it is also about thinking about what can the individual do, what can the community supports around you do, what can not-for-profits and other organisations in your community do, and what can businesses do. So my message is everyone has responsibility in making this society better, and we can all achieve that if we all play our role. So, you know, individuals can think about how what kind of supports they can get to educate themselves around things like, you know, being financially strong. How do you understand where, like, fringe lenders, for example, if you need to borrow money, knowing where to access no-interest loans is really important compared to turning up to a lender that's going to charge you huge interest rates
yes.
That you're then going to get stuck and trapped in. But we also need not-for-profits to be able to provide those services, and we need our banks to be able to provide people with access to those services. So my message is everyone has a role in this, and I think for individuals, you know, it's leadership is what you do. It's not your title or your role. And so if we all play our part in the community, we can create an entirely different and better and brighter future.
Beautiful words. Professor Christie, thank you very much. All the best to you, my sister. You take care and stay
Thanks
safe, and we'll yarn soon, eh?
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
De Leon. They were Professor Christy Muir is the CEO of the Center for Social Impact and a Professor for Social Policy in the Business School at the University of New South Wales in Sydney. Look, very important information there. It's sad, but one in eight people are living in poverty in this country, and the message is there for you as an individual is you can do your bit. Look at what you're doing regarding your education and controlling your balance in your budget and in your finance, and do what you need to do there. Positive mental attitude, motivation, have a vision, have a dream, all the above. Look, very important conversation and to better yourself and better your life and better all Australians and better the world. Look, have your say. Yarn up strong here on your daily program, National Talk Black. That daily number here is 1-800-422-416. Yarn with the Baldy One, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from your First Nation radio station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Group Media, 98.7 FM. Going across the nation, thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Give us a call, have your say, 1-800-422-416. Deadly voice there of Roger Knox. He touched me. Is that deadly track here on your daily program, National Talk Black? Have your say, your mob. Yarn up strong. 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black comes to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. BBM Bumber Brit Media, 9.7 FM. And we go across the country thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Yarn with a bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. Going to catch up with Solomon online. Good morning, my brother. How are you? You there, Solomon?
Hello.
Can you hear me? Yeah, brother, you can hear me in the background. Turn the radio down there, cuss.
You got me now, brother?
Yeah, I got you. Can you hear me?
Okay, brother. I'll go on. I can't sort of hear you. You might have been vinegary, brother, but
vinegary.
I've got a praise and also a bit of criticism, but I want to give two big shout-outs, brother, to Danny O'Shane. Sorry, Danny, I had a couple of days ago to the Cairns Palace and Tampa Bulletin. That never got printed, but Danny O'Shane, I like to say, you speak for me, and even though it sounds like a self-criticism of Cairns Post, I want to also praise the Cairns Post for yesterday, brother, and I want to pick up Cairns Post, the editor, Jennifer Spree, and the general manager, Andy Reeves. I'd like to thank them for their heart yesterday, brother. I'm a friend of the people who think that
No, you're breaking up there, brother. We'll try and get you back and continue the conversation. That's Solomon there. Solomon, if you can hear me, you're breaking up, my brother. Can you give me a call back or we'll try and call you, get a better line and so you can say your piece, my brother. And you're saying to We'll continue the conversation when you call back. That'd be great, your mob. But this is your daily program, National Talk Black. Daily number is 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, you can text the brother 045-714-0550 and our Facebook page as well, BBM987FM. And we go across the country thanks to news. Look, a deadly voice for our people. Do utilise it. And a lot of yarns we have on First Nation radio stations don't happen mainstream, but that's okay. We've got a fantastic tool here. And to all our First Nation radio stations across the country, big shout out. Thank you very much. Deadly Network it is. And gets all our stories, our yarns, and also our artists out there and performing. And also you hear from the horse's mouth, so to speak, regarding First Nation people and our plight for the 21st century. We are alive and kicking well and aren't going nowhere. Too deadly mob. Stay tuned, 1-800-422-416.
Sebastian here, hanging up on National Talk Black, your big
yarning show, BBM 98.7. I remember the day. Well, I was born in the city, but country music is my life. Shake it loose and let it fall, read the writing on the wall. If it's country, I love it all. When I was growing in the city, my daddy taught me my first chords. He taught me G, C, and D. Then I learned A and B. With those chords, I can play 100 songs. And we heard north to Alaska in the morning. We heard crystal chandeliers being played at night. And then the gang would all come round and they'd throw a few beers down. And the volume would climb up higher and higher. Well, back then old Charlie Pride, he was an icon. And old Johnny Horton marched on through the snow. But now that we have grown, we have come into our own. Lee Kern again and K
podcast of Daily Rock. And we learned to sing of Texas and Kentucky. And we learned to sing of Nashville, Tennessee. But if you can't look around, you'll find a homegrown sound. Australian countries right beneath our feet. Now I hear boys from the bush in the morning. I hear ladies of my life being played at night. Colin Chambers ain't that old. Jimmy Little, he's like gold. Dixie Chicks, you're gonna have to move aside. Yeah, I was born in the city, but country music is my life. Shake it loose, let it fall. Read the writing on the wall. If it's country, I love it all. Shake it loose and let it fall. Read the writing on the wall.
Homegrown Country by Warren Malira here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have you say, Mob, 1-800-422-416. We're going to catch up again with Selwyn. You there, brother? Can you hear me? Selwyn. Now, we've got a problem with your line there, Selwyn. Sorry, my brother. You have to call me. Can you hear me? Selwyn. No, not happening, brother. Not happening. We'll try and call you. Too deadly. All right, try and get the brother back online. It's Selwyn there. Want to have his say, yarn up strong. And you two can do the same by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Voice where people do utilise it with National Talk Black, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumber Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Have your say, mob, yarn up strong.
Black woman, black life, domestic violence, what a life. A change gonna come my way.
Change is going to come. That's Ruby Hunter here on your daily program, National Talk Black. We'll try again with Brother Selwyn. You there, brother?
Yeah.
Good.
Am I clear now?
I can hear you. Yes. Can you hear me?
You got a little bit of me first off.
Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, but anyway, brother, I'll go on what I was saying. I said I want to give a big shout out to Daniel Shane. I have two letters to the bulletin here, folks, but they weren't printed. So a big shout out to them. And, it's a quiet criticism of Cairns Post, but I also want to praise Cairns Post, especially for yesterday. But you see that cartoon yesterday? In the Cairns Post?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I think there were about eight statues, right? And one white fellow was helping the statue. And the white fellow at the end is on the Eddie Marble statue, like Tamalroy, Kujanini, Omi and Vincent Vigiari, Dendamara. I need a tree sheet. But the first statue was in colour and carved. They had a white dog standing up in front of it, Captain Cook, who's protecting it. And I look at the captain, but the other white at the end, carving the other statue of the armor. It's a good idea that protecting statues. That was really good. So Jennifer Spilsby was the editor, and Andy Reeves is the general manager. And brother, you know, it's good to criticize, but also to praise even the copy day, brother.
Exactly.
Anyway, on that subway on the Secret Party, it shows, brother, that the native title isn't there, right, brother? And, you know, with that statue I said before, a lot of bullying in there protecting the statue in Sydney, but no, here at the sacred site. And that is only 250 years, Captain Cook. And really, it's about the English, nobody else. And they frame it in such a way that it's like us whites and you blacks. But that sacred site is an issue for mankind, for everybody. It's not
yes,
English.
Exactly.
And, yeah, one of the things we're going to say further in talking about us why, you know, FUS, there are white people that would be two FUS about Pakistan's cooks. Thank you. I myself was a white people, a Russian, a European, especially the black people.
Exactly. Terranellis.
Yeah, brother. But the deck was already here. That's cooked chair could have been in. That's the people up there.
Exactly.
And there's a Sunday program put up also about the before the word even became trendy, and later on they said it was reconciliation. And Black Lives Matter, you know, who's been doing that since Alderman Cooper, Lukumba, takeover up here, Mom Share, all the market for the purpose. But we didn't say in those words, Black Lives Matter, medical center, the health, the law, we wasn't saying it even.
Well, Black Lives Matter, it all converts around black deaths in custody.
Yeah, brother, it just come up because they gave a...
Different title, same meaning.
Yeah, well, yeah, we didn't do it all the time.
They think we're jumping on the bandwagon to what's happening in America. It's happening here.
They're trivializing, even having a voice. Didn't have a voice. They had all that stuff. They took the microphone. Teach what they're thinking. They should have spoken up for us when Rick, the bully man, was a whistleblower that got to release that video putting the white cop bashing the white dog.
Yeah.
But that white woman that got killed over in the state that killed over in America. Who was the person? And you know, this stuff about, you see all the time. If you do the crime, you know.
Do the time, yeah. But I've got to go to another caller, my brother. That's Selwyn there. We'll try and get him back. Thank you, Brother Selwyn, adding to the conversation and making some very good points there. This is your daily program, National Talk Black, Trinity Trev, Murray from the Curry. Daily number is 1-800-422-416. We're going to go to Professor John Caldor, HMRC, Senior Principal Research Fellow and University New South Wales, Sanch Professor as well. Talk about public health response measures, lifting restrictions, and where to from here. On the line, we have Professor John. Very good morning, Professor. How are you?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Thank you. I'm very well. Thank you for coming to the program. So COVID-19, where to from here? Is there light in the tunnel? Do we see life change as we know it?
A lot has changed, hasn't it?
It has.
It's certainly been a very tumultuous period. And we are, I guess, cautiously coming back into what some people might think of as back to normal. Other people's lives have been, changed and
turned upside down.
Really considering, yeah.
Exactly. But we don't have a vaccine for the virus, so we're still treading on uncharted waters, so to speak, and we shouldn't be too complacent, yes?
I think we should be very far from complacent, and we've learnt a lot of different practices now, and, you know, we used to, just routinely do things like, shake hands or give our families and friends hugs and that kind of thing. And I think we're just trying to learn that it's probably these are things that we should be pretty cautious about, and especially people, you know, older people in the community, we need to be really concerned that they have, that they are kept as safe as possible.
Yeah, so like I said, the fundamental form of communicating a greeting somebody changes. It's all virtual going out the window, hasn't it?
Well, you know, it's hard to think. Yeah, you know, we things we take for granted for so long, we just now are put us at a potential health risk, or put our families and friends at a potential health risk, and we do have to be very careful.
Sure.
And we do give up something to you know, to protect people.
Exactly.
But,
so
you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is going to be a different change to when we come out of this. And but even having a vaccine, we still got to wait for that to come to the table.
Yeah, and you know, we hear a lot of reports about people, you know, breakthroughs and exciting news on the vaccine front. But we have to also be realistic that getting a vaccine that's going to work and.
Hmm. We're still up in the air about it, aren't we?
Long, long way, you know. And some vaccines, you know, can get discovered pretty quickly, but other ones, we know that they've been working on for decades and haven't got an answer. So
do you expect there is a possibility of a second wave, Professor? Just trying to get Professor John Caldor back.
Sorry, I put you on mute there by accident.
Yeah. Don't do that. Don't do that. We need
to
talk.
I'm back again.
Do you see, look, there is a possibility of a second wave with COVID-19, yes?
Some countries, I think you know, overseas you probably would have read that some countries have already experiencing a second wave. And I think the authorities in Australia are very aware that the infection is, even though it's gone to very low levels, it hasn't disappeared from our communities, and so it's still may be present. And the other thing is that then, you know, we've done very well with closing our borders and keeping our cases out from the country. Mm. But you know, that's not an absolutely, you know, foolproof strategy forever. So we I think there's a reality that cases will reappear. The question is then going to be how quickly we can pick them up and put a ring around them, because the whole strategy we have now is let's find the cases and let's get contact with cases and let's stop the transmission as quick as possible. So the chance of a second wave is reduced if we can get anybody who has, say, symptoms or people who have been exposed situations, they can get tested, then we'll stop the second wave.
Sure. And so if we just abide by the rules that are in place, that's our best medicine, you could say, in regard to flattening out the curve, yes?
Yeah, well, we've actually done more. We've squashed that first curve completely down to pretty much close to zero.
Good.
Done that very well. And what we need to do is continue to have very high vigilance of, and the things we've already talked about, first making sure that that people keep their distance as much as they can, because that's the only thing we know that will stop transmission, but that we also pick up cases as quickly as possible. And you're not going to pick up cases unless you do testing. So anybody who thinks they've got has some symptoms that might be getting more likely to be COVID, they should get tested. And there's plenty of places to get tested all over the country.
Sure.
And even in, you know, out in even outside the towns and cities, there's a good way to get tested now. There's a lot of opportunities to get tested. So don't be concerned about that. The best thing is to get tested if you have any suspicion that you might have been exposed or you have the symptoms.
Righto. So that's what we need to do in regard to keeping it all safe. Thank you very much for sharing with us, Professor John. All the best to you and your family. Take care, stay safe, and we'll yarn soon.
All the best for your program and your listeners.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.
A deadly yarn there. Professor John Calder, HMRC Senior Principal Research Fellow and University of New South Wales Scientia Professor. And we're just talking about the public health response measures, lifting restrictions, and where to from here. And it is, as you say, dim light, so to speak, at the end of the tunnel. But we just need to do what we need to do regarding keeping safe. There has been second waves and third waves in other countries. So we are, the virus itself is not prejudiced as such to any country. So we should not be too complacent in regard to COVID-19, your mob. So look, stay safe, to keep your distance. They said that doors opening up regarding our football organisation. So that'd be Jan. So we're going to catch up with Jan now. We've got Brother Sam back on the line. Brother Sam, Sam Becker, how are you?
Hey, Trev, how you going, my brother?
Yeah, good, Cuss. You've got about 4 minutes of a yarn, Murray, brother.
Murray from the Curry.
Murray from the Curry. What you want to yarn about, Sam?
Cuckadoos, Murray, eh?
Yeah, that's it, brother. Represent.
Represent. I'm Wongabai. Represent.
Yeah, that's it. Now, that's the Dan Ingham way, isn't it, my brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, too deadly, mate. Brother.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to catch up and have a yarn with you next week, but also you've got a march happening very soon here in Cairns, is that right?
Yeah, on the 3rd of July.
3rd of July, okay. And that's in aid of Black Deaths in Custody?
In aid of the, Rick and Dick. Next year's the 30-year implementation, we've said since the start of 436, and I was looking on The Guardian the other day, they were putting it in percentages, how much has been implemented, they're making us a race, and with their race power, and all of a sudden, shouldn't that thing be 100% from day dot?
Yeah, exactly.
If this coronavirus mutates. And it gets into the communities and they kill every backmuller. Well, it has mass unemployment here in Australia. We're a $1 billion industry.
Yeah, we're a $1 million industry. Yes, okay. I hear what you're saying, brother. Where you're alluding to?
What I'm saying, my brother.
Yeah, brother, I'm picking up.
Yeah. So we on the 3rd of July we're going to have a peaceful demonstration.
Peaceful.
Not a peaceful march, hosted by grassroots. Cape York Grassroots Aboriginal Corporation,
Yep.
And the North Queensland Land Council, all of our people will be there.
Good.
So, because this year that would have been our NATO day, of course, but because of the COVID.
Yes.
And the restrictions. So, but I just wanted to say good day all to my brothers and sisters out there and stay safe,
Stay safe, exactly, my brother.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you for that, Sam, but we're going to talk more in your march, and we'll have a yarn next week, Brother Sam.
You have a good weekend, my brother.
All the best, Cust.
And God bless to all the mama and mala out there.
Too deadly, bruh. That's Sam Becker, former Origin player, and too deadly the lad. We're going to catch up and finish that yarn with Selwyn quickly. Hey, not there. We'll try again and pick up Selwyn and have that yarn, finish that yarn. You there, Selwyn?
Yeah, brother, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, brother. Yeah, continue.
I call out from name, Dan Lynch, Pauline Anson, Mm. Kerry Lewis, the Queensland Police Commissioner, Dan Wheatley, the manager of Johnny Connor, Brendan Cowan, the blokes at Kings of the 15, Bantaka, Achilles, and the Chief of Gogo. There are a few names, brother, but I want to make the point that, you know, the white people hold a lot of their letters to them, and they're saying that our people, if we do the crime, we do the time. What do you expect if you go to jail? All them pilots, none of that happened to them when they went to jail. They never died in custody, all the names, I guess.
Exactly.
A lot more, but thank you, man. I just wanted to make that point. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Good point. Made it a very good point. And that's our fight for Black Deaths in Custody. You, Mob Murray, going to sign off here. Thank you very much for your company. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. And we'll be yarning soon. Got the news coming up on NIRS. Too deadly.
Hey, what you doing, your mob? It's me, Bush Tucker Bungie. And you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran.
National Talk Black. 1-800-422-416.
A canvas covered cabin in a crowded labor camp.